this is fucking happening quite a bit now. And I'm like, it's global domination, Dad.
The Fantasy Football Show.
Hello, Patreons. Happy Monday. 2 weeks in a row that we managed to get a Q&A together on a Monday. What's the world coming to?
Do we not normally?
Well, it's been so sporadic, hasn't it? I've been travelling and Clayton's been doing Q&A. I don't think we've done two in a row. Obviously, everything's my fault. Take personal responsibility for everything. It's my fault Arsenal aren't going to win the league, of course, isn't it?
Well, you want to thank you if they don't?
It's not my fault my team went there and won earlier in the season, well, James, is it?
I will say thank you.
They went to your place and won as well. They just seemed to lose a bloody everyone else. Prabesh Dahal. Which team was the biggest shock compared to pre-season predictions? He suggested Wolves or Burnley or somebody else. I do think, obviously, Burnley we thought would do well, but still, the step up is tough. So, but Wolves, we all had to go down. Considering Lopetegui left 3 days before the season started. It wasn't like he gave them any time to prepare.
Wolves is a very fair shout. I think the right answer is Villa, though.
Probably, yeah. Champions League, you wouldn't have thought they would get.
Yeah, I mean, even
and
though...
semis of a European trophy.
Even though their form on the last 6 months of last season suggested they could do that, I don't think any of us were tipping up Villa for fourth. So if Villa get fourth, then...
It's a big achievement.
Yeah, that's the right answer.
FPL Frog, if Switzerland were expelled from Euro 2024 and Bayer Leverkusen took their spot... Would you make them favourites to win the competition? Well, they don't lose, do they?
Right up there.
They don't lose, do they? Let's assume every Leverkusen player picked club over country.
Wow. Why Switzerland?
I'm not sure. Maybe they're just like the most neutral. Kuhn also asked a question. Which team would score last in a knockout game between Leverkusen and Real Madrid? I mean, both of them are ridiculous.
Well, there's every chance you'll find out in the Super Cup final if they both win their respective European finals. To go back to the original question on Bayern, Bayer in the Euros, yes, they would 100% be one of the favourites, and it would also have, in seriousness, the huge advantage of being a club that knows each other. So in reality, you could put any of probably the top 7-8 clubs in Europe and it'd probably near enough be favourites to win it, I should imagine. So Leverkusen would be right up there. The only reason they probably wouldn't be favourites is because of this reputational, they're not Real Madrid or Bayern Munich or something like that. Yep. But yeah, they would...
Yeah, it's still not a team...
Certainly top three.
Full of superstars still as well, yeah. David Beaton, Real Madrid have 14 Champions Leagues and it might even go to 15. Will any other team get to that number this century? 76 years left.
Shit, who's second?
Probably AC.
Seven?
And then Liverpool are up there. Yeah.
This century?
74 years.
Yeah, probably, because you might get something that just becomes really dominant that we can't see.
City, like, for example.
Well, you'd use Angie Makachakalakalakalakala. I remember when they were going to go and spend all their fucking millions and dominate all over the world. You might have a league that gets really powerful in terms of money or something like that, or, yeah, City or someone else in a different league. So I would say probably yes, but you couldn't put on who that will be.
No.
I mean, at the rate it's going, would Manchester City win how many win 14 more?
Yeah,
out 70
of
years.
14 out of 74,
one in five. Probably not.
No.
It's a cup competition at the end
exactly.
of the day.
We've seen that this year. Ben Cameron, where can you see Alfie Doughty ending up next year?
I mentioned Palace, didn't I? Because I'm trying to think of teams. In
Brentford?
Terms of back three,
they play a free sometimes.
Wolves, but I don't know. Can Wolves do anything financially?
How much do you think he'd go for?
It's not a priority. If Wolves keep Ryan Aignori, that's not a priority position, is it? They've got other areas of the squad they've got to strengthen more. How much would he go for? 15 or 20? It can't be that much, man.
Kuhn wants to know which two signings would make Palace contenders for Europe next season, if they were able to keep the current squad together, of course, right?
I was just going to say, Eze and Elise.
Keep your main squad together. If they were to keep Gahey and Anderson as two... Do you think they need a new keeper, or will Sam Johnstone be good enough?
Look, Henderson's not been problematic for them recently. We should acknowledge that. I'm not a fan of his, you know that.
Holding midfielder, maybe?
Well, no, not really, because Wharton has obviously made a really good impact, and Chait Doucouré has been a huge loss for them. So if Doucouré comes back fit, that's a really strong midfield too next year with nice balance. I mean, if you keep Mateta's form...
So yeah, maybe a left winger? So they've got right winger Elise, Eze at 10, Mateta up top.
Tyreek Mitchell's been playing well as well.
Yeah, but left wing, that's back is, four. Wilf Zaha?
This goes for a lot of teams, right? Let's look at Brighton. I know they, Palace and Brighton are the rivals, obviously. But if Brighton had kept their whole squad fit all season, they would be in a better position, wouldn't they? We can't say how much more, but they would be in a better position. Chelsea, Newcastle, Tottenham, Villa even, Manchester United, all of these teams, injury-wise, will probably feel like they'd have had a better season if it wasn't for injuries. And with Palace's case, we say it all the time, it's like, if Eze and Elise are fit, they're a top 10 team. Without them, they're going to really struggle. Clear. So the best two signings they could do this summer is them two on extensions, and find a way of keeping them fucking fit all season would be the biggest difference. Because I think even without anything else, could Palace, under their new manager, push towards Conference League place or something like that next season? Well, yeah, if they keep the squad fit. I think goalkeeper would be one. I think probably another centre-back. If they're going to play in a back three regularly, they'll want something better there, even if Mark Gay was to stay. So I think those would be the two priority ones. But then you're looking at depth. But then Palace aren't going to fuck around with the team, right? If Mateta maintains his form, Eze, Elise, etc., they're not going to come out of the team. So you don't need the depth if you can keep them fixed. It's only one game a week, right?
Cool. Harry G, who were the stronger out of... who were the stronger top two out of the seasons? Arsenal and City this year? Or Klopp's Liverpool that ran City so close?
Say that again. So
which was a better top two? City this year and Arsenal, or City the year they ran close City, to Liverpool?
If it,
that was brutal, that.
They finished second on 97. So
yeah, it's crazy.
I mean, that's insane.
It's crazy. You
know, Liverpool would have pissed the league this year. That Liverpool would have won this league. No doubt about it.
Yeah.
So it has to be that. I realise you can look at Arsenal now, i.e. the 2024 Arsenal, and say amazing consistency this year. What have they won? All but two games?
Two.
Or one game, is it, in 2024?
Drawn one, lost one, I think.
Oh, draw with City. Yeah, draw with City and lost to Villa. Fucking hell. I mean, that's mad. But across the whole season, you'd have to still say that Liverpool. Ask this question again in 12 months and you might get a different answer. I think... Arsenal's target next season will be 100 points. I think that's what he'll set them as a target.
Yep. John Jacobson, what side in the playoffs do you want to come up based on the away day as a fan? So you've got Norwich, Leeds, Southampton or West Brom. You want to go down to the South Coast?
Not Leeds. It's nothing disrespectful against them, but it's one of them places you've got to be a little bit more on your toes, I think.
Just in case. It kicked off against Norwich, didn't it, the weekend? I saw some post, but I don't know. You don't know what's fake.
That was
fake
at Norwich, wasn't it?
Yeah, you don't know if it's fake or if it's...
Whereas the other three, I mean, West Brom, you kind of go to Birmingham, really.
Mm. Southampton?
Norwich, Southampton, as long as you behave yourself, you're right. Probably Norwich.
Okay.
Probably. Norwich just over Southampton. I kind of like both. I mean, it'd be different now. Ipswich are coming up. But Southampton's like the only one that's kind of south that way. Like go to Reading first. We found is the best way of doing it. It's obviously on that way towards Bournemouth, but I can never get a fucking ticket for Bournemouth. Yeah, Norwich.
Southampton, Norwich. I'm going to say. Not Norwich. That I've been to any of them. Right, next question is coming in from Gary Robinson. How close is Saliba to being the best centre-back in the world? You got VVDs out there.
I mean, VVD's not in that conversation.
No, but I mean, this at peak. Have you got any City centre backs in there?
Best defenders in the world.
Centre back. Centre back.
Best centre backs in the world at the moment. Trying to think. So you've got like Mats Hummels, Eric Dier. You can interrupt me anytime you like. Yeah, Saliba's right up there. I think that how quickly he adapted last season. I said within about his 12th game last year that he was already in contention with that. And then actually he had a couple of sloppy displays after that. I remember one at Wolves was a bit shaky. But yeah, he would be in contendership for that. I think as a partnership, they just work really well, him and Gabriel as well. And you should factor that it is a partnership as well. But yeah, William Saliba is justifiable to be in that conversation. The problem for me when I have questions like this, I said this about someone was asking about, I think, Ballon d'Or on my deadline stream. And I was like, look, I can't even tell you'd be player of the year in Serie A. So there might be some like outstanding centre-backs in Serie A at the moment who I couldn't really give you proper comment on because I haven't watched any of it. So I find these questions difficult to answer. In terms of Premier League, it'd probably be the best now, I think, 100%. At this moment.
Yep. John Jacobson has asked a great question, but I'm going to skip it because I think it's great pre-season, post-season content. So, John, I'm not ignoring your question, but re-ask it next week and I'm actually going to see if we can make a 20-minute show out of it. Stian Therapy. So it's not a requirement for a stadium to be waterproof or safe. Did you know that? How have Man United fans, board, supporters, trust allowed it to get to that point? It's pretty bad. I mean, Gary Robinson says, not sure what any stadium could have done about the storm, to be fair. It was a lot of water out of nowhere.
Yeah, if it comes down like that, even at Tottenham Stadium, to give it a little bit of fairness, if you are down the front of the South Stand,
you'll get wet.
If Very it comes wet. Down like that, you will get battered with it, honestly. I think Tottenham should have made the roof a bit bigger, but it's all to do with the sound elements and stuff like that. So that's not, if you've got any angle on the rain, because you remember rain doesn't necessarily come straight down, right? If you've got wind, you've got any angle on it, you're going to get wet even at Tottenham. The difference on this one is you don't expect to be underneath the roof.
Right.
And to have water pouring down through your feet and that in the corner is just such a bad look and representation. I know United fans have been saying this for a long time. I said on the main pod, I went, couldn't see any problems. But yeah, you see that yesterday. It's embarrassing. It was one hell of a storm, but you'd have to say that, would that have been the case at any other stadium? No, not any. Of course, you don't have to have protection from the elements necessarily, because you can have a stadium, you know, someone got promoted and they haven't got a roof. Like there isn't a factual requirement to have a roof necessarily.
Yep.
And quite often when stadiums get rebuilt, obviously, you know, you might get partial seating in, say, a lower tier while they're finishing it off or something, and it's got no roof on the top. That's not that uncommon.
Yep. I've never seen leaking inside the London Stadium, but you know our stairs to go up are external. They're not internal.
Yeah.
Not all of them. Some of them are internal, but I get that. Not the upper bit of the lower tier is internal. But that the water drips down there like nobody's business. But it's external.
Well, when I went, it pissed down that night, didn't it? So I saw all that, right?
Yeah. So that's on the outside. It's not inside the stadium. You don't get pissed on in your seat, put it that way.
Okay, let's define this. The concourse
is
what you're referring to, is technically it's under a roof.
Yeah.
But the way it was built, you feel like you're outside.
Because the whole perimeter that keeps you inside, all of those doors and gates, they didn't exist during the Olympics because there was no need to segregate fans.
Yeah.
Whereas that was all put in afterwards to create segregation because it was open. The whole point of it was to be straight out onto the concourse and stuff. So it's all an afterthought.
But yeah, the reason that is when I went is this massive gap for the rain just to come through the middle of it. It's strange.
It's drainage.
Why didn't you just fill it in?
Who knows? Gears says, what's your thoughts on John Terry turning up to his Premier League Hall of Fame induction wearing all him medals? Undeniably great centre-back, even greater Belland, in my opinion. What a howler. I didn't see that, so no, I can't comment on it.
I haven't seen it either, but it doesn't surprise me. Yeah.
He feels like the kind of guy that could, in 24 months, be going down the same road as Matt Le Tissier, for example. John Terry started spouting conspiracy theories and stuff like that, went off the rails. It wouldn't surprise me.
Just so true.
I just feel like John Terry's going to end up going down the Matt Le Tissier road. Oi, oi, oi. Pirlo's pen. How does James see the Spurs-Sheffield United game playing out tactically? Coming from someone interested in captaining Sonny. Huh.
Look, there's obviously a circumstance here where Tottenham might have to go for goals on Sunday. Might actually finally knock some fucking sense in them to start a game properly rather than just ending a game properly. So that's something to be answered later in the week. But in terms of tactically, I mean, realistically, does it matter? The reality is, how is Sheffield United going to turn up? Sheffield United, I think this season, generally speaking, have actually been fine in a lot of games until they've gone behind.
Yep.
So if you score that early goal, as some of the teams like, you know, Villa, Arsenal, Newcastle have gone up there and done, and then twatted them stupid, Brighton another one, although admittedly it was against 10 men, then you get that early one. If their heads are down, you get the home end empties and stuff. If Tottenham are going for goals, like, is it inconceivable Tottenham go up there and win 5-6-0 on Sunday? Like, it's not. It's also just as conceivable we go up there and
1-1 draw,
wet the bed and draw 2-2 and something like that, right? It's also conceivable. So I think it's more one for later in the week. From a tactical perspective, well, I imagine you'll get Sheffield United in what's essentially a 3-5-2 at the moment. I don't think for playing my team to change that to a back four. With Tottenham, you know exactly what you get from a system perspective. We'll dominate the ball. Whatever it is, we'll have like 70% of the ball. You know that.
Darren Malloy, is it true that the waterfall inside Old Trafford has now become a protected landmark and that's why the club refused to fix it? Ali Brookman says that he thinks it's now the third or fourth highest waterfall in England.
So there's been clearly quite a bit of Manchester United digging going on last year.
There has. Right. Billy, Fantasy Billy Dougal, yeah? I rate this. I've been trying to put together an 11 of players whose initials are the same as the position that they have played at some point in their career. He's got a 4-4-1-1. What can you both come up with? We can't do it in this show. It'll take forever. However, goalkeeper, Gabor Kirali.
This is scraping barrels, this is.
Right back. Reece Burke. Two centre-backs.
Reece Burke's a centre-back.
Calvin Bassey.
Okay, you can
Carlos have Bocanegra.
Yeah, go on, you can have that as well.
Left-back, Leighton Baines.
Yeah, you can definitely have that.
Right midfield, Riyad Mahrez.
Yeah.
Two central midfielders, Claude Makélélé.
Yeah.
And Claudio Marchisio.
Is that all you could find?
Left midfield, he's stuck Leo Messi out there.
No, you can't have that. You can't have that, mate. You can't have that.
He's got a centre forward, Caleb Folan.
Fuck me.
And he's got a striker, Svetoslav Todorov. ST striker.
No. You can't have that. You need centre forward. You can't have striker.
Okay, so you need another centre forward.
You could have maybe like
and a right back.
A second striker, like an SS. Could you have an SS? What can I think of? Steve Stone. That definitely doesn't work. I mean, Jesus, off the top of your head, that's madness. I'm trying to think of left-sided midfielders. Why are you just trying to rattle through hundreds of names in your head? So the midfielder on the left of a surname.
What about an LW, a left wing?
Oh, left wing. That's interesting. It's got to be less Ws. It should be easier to find.
Probably.
Shouldn't it? I can't even think of any player whose surname begins with W now. right.
It's a good one, Billy, but it's a long one. I don't think we'll
John
figure
Walters,
out.
Joker winger.
James Morrison, should the EFL change their playoff format? The two games yesterday, Norwich Leeds, West Brom, Southampton, were snorefests. Maybe change the semi-finals into one-off games and give the teams that finish higher home advantage.
So a shout out to our Luton correspondent, Dan Ashby. He nearly reeled me in yesterday. I saw a tweet. He said, if you're not watching the Championship playoff semi-finals, you can't even like football. was going to say, I'm doing my bit here to support women's football, actually. By the way, can we just have a shout out for Tottenham's girls and the principal idea of to play like the men's first team? Because the way we defended fucking corners.
I'm not sure if they're doing that on purpose, though, to be fair.
What was the question? Oh, the playoff semi-finals. Look, I've literally not even seen a second of either championship playoff final semi-final yesterday. I understand they weren't the best of games. Unfortunately, the playoffs, this romance narrative we have around about how brilliant the playoffs are, the bigger the teams you have in there, and I think that's four pretty strong clubs who've all been Premier League in the last few years, the more likely it's going to be fucking crap.
Mm-hmm.
Because they realise what's at stake, and this romance narrative about amazing playoff finals. The playoff finals were fucking amazing in the 1990s. Most of them haven't been great in the, you know, in 2024 now. But he has kept this, the playoffs are amazing, rah, 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 and there are amazing ones. But he does feel like it's more often when you get someone gets in there who hasn't had the dream, you know, it doesn't know what's to lose at stake. For these four clubs, it's like financially critical that they get back up, right? So it's going to create this sort of thing. I understand what the question's saying. Should you just have Leeds at home to Norwich and Southampton at home to West Brom?
To create a bit more jeopardy or excitement or need to win on the day.
Maybe. 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 But I don't think you'll...
Or introduce away goals.
Again, think of what we discussed when we did the League Cup podcast and even when me and Clayton discussed the FA Cup one, right? You're taking, if you make them one legs, you're taking away six big fixtures from a TV perspective. Like I watched Crawley the other night. I watched extra time of Doncaster and Crewe last week, right? Just because there was nothing else on and a little man had gone to bed. So you're taking away six fixtures from a TV perspective? Yeah, it's not happening.
Right. We'll come back to Ian's question last, because last question of the show. Kuhn, your three favourite game week 38 punts for FPL.
I don't know if there's anything I can throw out there as a punt. It's like, oh, I've never heard of that player.
I so do think like an alternative City. So whether it's Bernardo Silva or Julian Alvarez.
Yeah, I don't mind
that. I don't mind a set, because one of them is going to go off crazy if they score.
But Alvarez probably won't even start. But Bernardo Silva. Bernardo,
two assists at the weekend, 9 points. I think an alternative City, definitely, in Bernardo. I think still going to Palace is okay at home to Villa.
Yeah, Lise is going to get steamed into this week anyway, probably. I think. Particularly if Villa win tonight, I think.
I do think
or even if Villa look really bad tonight.
That Burnley Forest game, I think, could go off. I don't think either are going to be too bothered about defending.
I think Hudson-Odoi from the two. It's Forest away from home. Like, it's not. You know, Kulusevski had a great final day at Norwich a couple of years ago. Might be a name you could throw into the hat under that circumstance, maybe.
I think Trossard is a
Trossard,
bit punty.
Yeah. Luis Diaz.
Anyone at Liverpool, because that home game against Wolves looks tasty.
No one's going to tell you anything that's fucking groundbreaking, I don't think.
Yeah. Maybe a Brighton player at home to Man United.
Like a Dinger or something. But then if you were going to do that, wouldn't you have just gone for it for the double, maybe?
Probably. Okay. Right. Last question of the show, James, goes to Southend Ian. What have you done that disappointed your parents the most, and what did you learn from it? Whew. What have I done that disappointed my parents the most? I think my mum's most disappointed that I didn't become a lawyer. She wanted me to become a lawyer all through my childhood when I was like 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. Nah, because she's happy enough now. So that probably disappointed her. I think like when you get caught doing things you shouldn't, like smoking or whatever at a young age, that disappoints them. That annoys them more than I think disappoints them. They're like, oh, little shit. But all kids are little shits like that.
I hid my smoking for ages from my dad because he was so against it.
Yeah.
His mum was a bit of a chain smoker.
Do either of your parents smoke? No.
Nah. Okay. They both did when they were like younger, in their teens or 20s or whatever. But I hid it from my dad for ages because he was so against it. And he still thinks to this fucking day that the reason I stank of fags so bad was because I worked A in the pubs and then B in the bookies. But he just never twigged on that, like, it got banned in like 2006 and I still come home stinking in like 2009. He still, and I've never had doubts, like, Dad, listen, I've been smoking since I was like 16. Like, what the fuck? And I remember we'd had a bad result one night, and I was like, yeah, I'm smoking. Yeah, what are you going to fucking do about it? Like, not now. Like,
how old were you?
Then?
Yeah.
By that point, I'd in my 30s, I'd have said, yeah.
Oh, fair play.
Yeah.
I quit when I was about 27, 28. I was never a heavy smoker, but after about 23, 24, because my dad still smokes to this day, he's always been a smoker, was when I first would nick a cigarette off him or smoke with him. But obviously we'd never tell my mum that. Like, she would fucking not have none of it. But he didn't really give a shit either way. But yeah, that's probably the one that's disappointed them the most. All right, on the flip side, says Ian, what do you think has made your parents most proud of you?
I ain't finished with the bad ones
yet. Oh, go on. Let's go back to the bad disappointments.
I'll tell you one. This is a good story, right? When I was coming up to 15, 14, I was, and there was a party going on in Marylebone. A couple of lads wanted to go to. And I knew that my mum and dad wouldn't let me go.
Yep.
I knew they wouldn't let me go. It was on a Saturday night. So I said, like, I'm going to stay at my mate's. And I did stay around his quite a lot. He actually lived not too far from where we are now in Barnet. And obviously, my mum and dad live, I say obviously, Hornsey. But anyway, so it was like, oh, you know, phone us when you get there or whatever. Fine. So I phoned.
No mobile phones in those days.
Just slightly before.
Yeah.
But I'd done it from a fucking call box, right?
Oh, okay.
Old fucking call box outside this fucking party. And I'm sure you could probably hear people shouting in the fucking background and stuff. This fucking house, by the way, was about fucking five floors, this fucking house. It was massive. So I phoned, I was like, yeah, I'm here, right. Anyway, mum had done like the one for one, is it?
Yeah.
The fucking, where the fuck are you? Oh, you're in Marylebone, yeah. You're nowhere near fucking Barnet. Anyway, mum never said nothing. Anyway, we got fucking twatted drunk, right?
Yeah.
I'm 14. Next morning, got a game. And anyway, turned up.
The irony is, when you're 14, twatted drunk, you probably had like two, three beers.
Oh, probably like five cans of like Foster's or something like that, yeah.
Not even a lot.
Turned up the next morning, was like, oh, this is the first time I'm ever going to fucking play football drunk. Anyway. I scored the first and I didn't score often. We were 10-0 up at half time.
Did you ask to be taken off?
Yeah. And my dad lost his fucking lip. But what I did stupid was I took the shirt off.
On the way off.
Yeah. And I said, let someone else have a go. One of the guys on the bench who don't play often, like, let them play, man. And really, I was sweating. There was no need for me to be out there and get me off the pitch and stuff. My dad never spoke to me for about 2 weeks.
Oh, man.
I didn't know for years that mum never told him about the Marylebone stuff. He was just so vexed with me about
taking my shirt off.
But my mum had hammered me, right? But I never knew that dad didn't know. He proper blanked me for like 2 weeks. He wouldn't speak to me.
Of your parents, so who's the one that will let you get away with shit and who's the one that's a fucking...
Oh, both of them twats.
Oh, okay, fine.
Yeah, they're both would you could rap.
My dad don't give a shit. He's chilling.
And rap. I think what they'd be most be proud of now, like I've not turned into like a drug dealer or a fucking criminal or anything like that. He'd probably be quite proud that I've made a niche for myself doing something I enjoy and stuff, and you know probably how I am with Harry and stuff like that. I should imagine.
I was going to say for me, it's grandkids and getting into where they are and like parenting. Yeah. They obviously. Grandkids is all they really give a shit about. Of course, they're going to be proud about your, because it's a passion like that they would have known that you've had for since you're a kid, right? But they would never have thought of it, maybe because they are not even from a generation of YouTube and shit where it can actually pay the bills, you know. And for them, it's probably impressive to
my dad. Proper thinks I'm like someone I'm not now as well. Like yesterday he was telling my mum and Katie, and it's not like a big deal now because it happens a fair bit. But it's like. Was at Stamford Bridge last week.
Yeah.
Going in the ground, the steward says, oh, hello, James. Fucking hell, love your podcast. I'm like, oh, cheers, mate. Thank you.
Yeah.
My dad's like, this, but this is fucking happening quite a bit now. And I'm like, it's global domination, Dad. Like, don't worry about it.
Nice.
Like,
it's good. I like it that you can see that.
Katie's like, shut up. I don't want to fucking hear about it. So what? Someone said hello to him and whatever. Like, yeah. You're fucking everywhere these days. Right, whatever. Unsubscribe.
Yeah, exactly. cool. Good, good, good. Yeah, that would be it. I was going to say something. I forgot. Doesn't matter.
About content?
We were talking about like which parent is the good one and the annoying one. So my dad's chill. He didn't give a shit about anything, really. But obviously, we got a work trip to Amsterdam in...
That's soon, isn't it?
6 or 8 weeks. And my old man's coming down as well because he works for me in the business and stuff. And I'm curious, like, I don't think he'll smoke weed in Amsterdam. I think he'll come out and chill in the cafe. I don't think he'll give a shit about
your dad's stone to be so fucking funny, man.
Yeah, I think probably based on the fact that he's now like mid-70s, probably hasn't smoked weed for
it might not be the best idea,
50 boss. Years. I think probably take it easy and don't bother, just in case the risks of any adverse health effects are mad. But my missus obviously coming on the trip. She works here as well. And she's like, oh, I can't smoke weed if your dad's coming on the trip. I'm like, well, why not? Like, he ain't going to give a shit. He's not fucking living under a rock. He knows what Amsterdam is. He's been there a few times, obviously, admittedly, probably not for a while, but it's not like...
Are you prepared for all your fucking subordinates to see you wankered, mate?
I'm not going to get wankered.
No?
Nah, definitely not. I don't think I'm drinking. Like, I haven't...
But you've never seen yourself stoned, and I have.
Yeah, but it's fine. It's not like throwing up levels of stuff, right? Bad stuff doesn't happen. Although, I will have to... prepare the, like, behave, kids. Don't do anything stupid.
Yeah, and you'll be the biggest twat of all, mate.
Nah, bottom line is, right, firstly, don't do anything illegal. Like, if it's legal in the country that you're in, it's all good. Okay. Don't do anything that will get you arrested. And don't do anything that would, if it was in England, could risk you losing your job, right? Just don't do that. Anything else, I'm cool with. But yeah, just don't get yourselves arrested or do anything illegal. And don't end up in jail or, you know, anything that could potentially risk losing your job. Everything else I'm cool with, whatever. But yeah, it'll be interesting. So let's see. There you go. Make my dad
proud. Is everyone going to work in the office on a Monday as well?
Unless they've booked it off. Yeah.
You're going to get some sore fucking ass.
That's it. Booked it off. See, there's 3 return flights on the Sunday. There's some coming back at 10, 11 in the morning. Most at like 2, 3 in the afternoon. And then there's only 3 or 4 people that stay until like 7 o'clock. So most will have Sunday afternoon, evening to relax. So, yeah. And also, we don't have an office full of like 20-year-olds. There's a mixture of people in their 40s, 50s, 60s. We've got people coming in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s and 70s. No teenagers, but there's no teenagers there. But that's it. So, you know, you're going to get people that are not out on a big one and just enjoying the city, tulips and all that. And you're going to get people that are probably party. Anyway, enough about Amsterdam. Stay safe. Look after yourselves. You've been to Amsterdam, by the way. Ciao for now.
Never. Cue music, please, man child.
Fantasy Football Show.